Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast. Let me tell you about my friends at Naked Vine. Located at 1624 Clarkson Road in Chesterfield, Missouri. Serving up the finest wine, whiskey, tequila, and local craft beers. Stop by this week for some great live entertainment. Steven Chozich will be out there on Thursday, April 18th. John Bonham and Friends on Friday, April 19th. And Kent Earhart and the Blue Moon Blues Band return Saturday, April 20th. You can find all this and more at nakedvine.net. Be sure to follow along on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And mark your calendars for May 14th. I return to Naked Vine with my singer-songwriter storytelling showcase, bringing along my good friends Billy Crogan and Tony Compton of Les Gruff and the Billy Goat, and Karen Choi. So do not miss that show. $5 cover, 7 o'clock start. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. Also, I want to tell you about my friends at Joseph Meyer Club. If you haven't checked it out yet, head on over to josephmeyerclub.com today and try out their brand new foaming aftershave. Try it with 20% off by entering my code RPPJMC20. During checkout, and you're gonna want to get this. It smells awesome, and it's a great product, and I use it myself, and I love it. So I want you to try it out too. Again, RPPJMC20 for 20% off, and always free shipping. So check them out. Also follow along on Facebook. Again, josephmeyerclub.com. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Enjoy the show.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Joshua Loyal, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out today with Joshua Loyal. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
This is cool, man. Like, you're a guy I've known online mostly. I've seen you out of pops here and stuff, but we have never really had a proper conversation and stuff, so this is a... That's what this show is really good for, is allows me to kind of have these moments where we can sit down and talk and get to know each other a little better and stuff. So thanks for doing this today.
My pleasure.
I've known of some of your work, especially through music, putting different concerts and different things together and stuff like that, just because I've been a huge music fan in St. Louis for several years, so I think that's where I started noticing your name and Loyal Family stuff, but like I said, this is kind of want to get to know a little bit more about some of that, how this all started and how you kind of started building this this empire and stuff you got going here. It's like you got your hands in a lot of different things, so we got a lot to talk about.
Yes. Well, I could... How far do we go back? I remember throwing this party in college.
Yeah.
Where I found the house for the party. I had a band that was going to do cover songs of 311 and Rage Against the Machine and Beastie Boys. And they... I got my hands on a keg of beer. And I stood at the door and I charged money, you know, I promoted the show. I pretty much did all of the above.
Right.
Stood in a spot where I could tell the band that they were playing too loud or to stop, and I could still work the door at the same time. And kind of a nice command point at the center. That one sticks in my mind in college. We also had this little hangout in our basement where we'd play music, and it was an upcycled little basement bar hangout place that kind of has a maybe a Venice Cafe vibe or something like that. So I think I had some things growing up, and I had some early experiences that I remember at least, that seemed to set me on that path.
Right. I guess, but always as a
general music fan? Like, you just wanted to...
I don't play.
Right. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
I want to say I can't. I could say I can't play. All right. With respect to everyone that can't. I don't know if I can play or not. So far, I have not been able to play. I have not been able to even focus long enough to take, you know, the time. I love music. I absolutely love it, but I don't play. And for me, this has always been a... Yeah, everything that I do is my contribution to that music scene and to live music without the ability to actually play a note myself.
Right.
And the ones that do, for those of us that have those people in our lives, we know them and love them, and most of them are not able to, you know, focus on some of the things that I do for a living because they're busy, you know, doing their music, playing the music and practicing, and they should be, you mm-hmm. know, focusing on their passion. And this is mine.
Sure. Yeah, that's where I was at. Like, I had all these friends in music, and I was like, I just want to help, whatever, in some capacity. And I started writing like a blog, and then I kind of got burnt out writing, and I was like, well, I'm going to start just, I just mainly wanted people to listen to music. So as podcasting became more of a thing, and popularized, I was like, started listening to a ton more, and then I was like, well, maybe I'll just do that, and then, like, people can play their music on the show, and, you know, that's really what I was going for anyway, so it made a lot more sense to kind of let the music speak for itself, and then I started, you know, from there, and, like, but I've gotten into booking shows now, too, and it's just, like, it's just what I just want to be involved in music as many different ways I can, and so it's cool to see that, you know, hearing your story, it started like that too, like just wanting to be in the music stuff. And
yeah, I think it's a combination of wanting to help out the musicians and also provide something for the fans to do, you know, in that environment, to, you know, take a break from the world for a few hours and get together on a different level, you right. know, focus on some different things for a few. And I think there's a need for that
mm-hmm.
always.
Yeah.
yeah.
So was I guess where I kind of started taking notice was some of the stuff like with the 2720 and things like, was that your kind of your first taste of that, like at that level of doing stuff, or did you work with another venue and stuff before then? And
Yeah, actually, I mean, the reason I opened 2720 was because I was booking so many shows at other venues. At that time, I was booking Broadway Oyster Bar, Off-Broadway, Old Rock House, Cicero's, Gramophone, or, you know, I don't know about the years on the Gramophone, but I know whenever they were open, I was happy to book a place, happy to book a show there. I think I was booking around two shows a month or two shows a week at Old Rock House prior to finding 2720. So, I mean, I was ready for my own place.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to going to somebody else's house that frequent, you know,
right.
just kind of want your own room, you know? And, so I looked all over town. I looked on the Locust District over there where Plush gave it a shot, and I looked down around Oyster Bar at a few different buildings down there, Shoto's Landing, west of the Oyster Bar, ended up finding Cherokee, and it was a perfect fit. It was a great almost decade. Wouldn't trade it for anything.
Yeah.
You know, it was a dream. I mean, I had my own club and art gallery and with my friends and my family, and everybody's working together, and that was a really good energy to be a part of over there.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, that was something that in a way it was a place for me to put all of my energy into and kind of focus on, but it also absorbed all of my time. You know, definitely Loyal Family, really, like, we had a clothing line going and shows in multiple cities, and we were promoting different festivals back then, like Summer Camp and Wakarusa and 10,000 Lakes and doing these Battle of the Bands tours. And I mean, we were building a network of 25 or 30 cities at that time. And then 2720 kind of took over, and I kind of had to give everything else a, you know, put it on the shelf,
right,
for the most part. I was busy.
Yeah.
Really busy. And still the Blue Moon was open throughout that time. My dad definitely took the lead, and I didn't book as much there, but it was always on the schedule, and there's shows happening almost every week still.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it wasn't busy, it was still, you know, 50 plus shows a year.
Right. Yeah.
Not too many, you know, just a little part-time gig.
Yeah. So would you have a particular moment that, like, you think of that as like the height of 2720, like a particular thing come to mind?
That's a tough question to narrow it down to something.
You threw a bunch of really great shows over there, so.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I think there was a ton of great shows.
Right.
I mean, things pop into my mind, like Lee Fields and King Khan and the Shrines on a Sunday with like 350 people in there when we kind of had first opened. Some of the early shows like Big Gigantic and Emmett Nershey and some of the Messy Jiverson shows. I mean, Stanton Moore, bands that I'm forgetting because there was so much awesomeness that came through there.
Right.
It was really, yeah. I mean, as good as it gets, that size venue for me is really on a personal level still. As you get bigger, you lose that, you know? You lose that ability to have that intimacy.
Sure.
With the artist, and even the venue and the artist and their relationship, and not only the fans, but all around. It's a small enough show that kind of takes some of the stress out of it, you know? Lets everybody relax and just really get to know each other.
Yeah, I like that kind of stuff. I mean, that's why I frequent a lot of those places you mentioned earlier, you know, Oyster Bar and Off Broadway and Old Rock House. Like, I love that smaller, intimate shows like that and stuff. And so it's always been a big part of my concert experiences and stuff. And
definitely, I kind of started at Venice Cafe when I was, well, we'll say just old enough to drink. Seeing Benny Smith and James Crutchfield, that was definitely like one of those moments where I was like, fell in love with the music, the musicians, the bar, the vibe, the interaction of the fans and the music, and the musicians selling their CDs after the show. And we're talking about, you know, 85-year-old musicians that are world class, that should be traveling the world playing theaters and arenas and stadiums, and they're in a 30 or 40 person bar selling their $10 CDs out of their trunk after the show.
Right.
Like, that was, to me, I was like, man, I could be happy making a living just helping people like this get what they deserve. Like, keep playing, focus on your passion. I'm going to figure out whatever it takes to get you out of selling your CDs out of your trunk when you're 85 years old, you know, or whatever. I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And if I can only do it for one or five of those people in my life, then that's, you know, that's going to be worth it. I might have to do some other things to make a living, but but if I can do that, that's going to be something that I, you know, I'm going to keep that in a special place and try to fit that into my crazy life somewhere.
Yeah.
It kind of ended up taking over. And I started Loyal Family when I was booking too many shows outside of Pop's Blue Moon, but wasn't really making any money. I was just like, yeah, I can get you a gig over there, and yeah, I'll get you a gig over here, and sure, sure, sure. And next thing you know, I had like 5 or 10 gigs a week that I was helping out with, but I wasn't even making a dime off of, or even, you know. So I just had to make it into a business.
Yeah.
If I was going to keep doing it as a hobby. It's one of those.
Yeah.
You either have to limit your time as a hobby, or you turn it into a business and you can keep doing it.
Right.
And rationalize spending more time on it.
Yeah. But you mentioned Pop's Blue Moon, and as far as shows today, this is you spend a lot of time over there. And then you guys got a big show coming up, celebrating the 20th birthday of Pop's Blue Moon.
Yeah.
And that'll be on May 18th, and you guys are throwing a big old street fest out here?
Yeah, we used to do the street fest once a year or so, and it was always a great party. We've had a lot of fun times. We will be closing the street off. We'll do some food, some music, art, vendors, all that is loyal family.
Yeah. How did you get associated with Pop's Blue Moon? Is this you mentioned your dad helping out too and stuff. Is it like, have you guys?
Dad is Pops.
Okay, he is Pops. All right,
officially.
All right.
My dad and I bought Pops from the third generation of an Italian family, the Gianella family. It's Frank, Paul, and Frank. For three generations, they ran that bar. It's been there since 1908. So it's 110, over 110 years old itself, which is awesome. And officially, as far as I know, and I've put the call out there for anyone to please let me know if they know of anything different, but from what I'm told, that we're the oldest still functioning bar on the hill, or in the city of St. Louis, which to be the oldest still functioning bar is pretty cool.
For sure.
To be the second family of in five generations is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm honored that we were able to carry on this place from that last generation. So thanks, Frank.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I knew a little bit that it's definitely, I didn't realize it was that quite that old, and that is, considered one of the, or the oldest still operating.
Yeah, I think there's one in the county, a really old bar that I should know, and I don't want to guess because that'll make me sound silly if I'm wrong, but like Herbie's or Hugo's or something.
Okay.
There's a really old bar in the county that apparently has been there forever.
Yeah.
Or longer. But nonetheless, 110 years is a long time.
Sure.
It's pretty neat. It's got a lot of history, cool stories. I've heard all the stories I can fit in my head. When we first opened, we were still kind of a World War II hangout. So there was a whole bar full of World War II veterans. And they would tell me stories about the bar, and old Pops used to do this, and, about the neighborhood before the highway came through, and just stories that go way back. And they were awesome. I mean, the stories that literally wore a spot right into the bar at the corner, and they would tell me why that spot was wore into the bar.
Right.
So it was a really special opportunity for me to learn history from a unique angle.
Yeah.
From the guys in the bar that talked about the neighborhood. I mean, some of that stuff's about as real as it gets.
For sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why I like doing this show.
Yeah.
I like having these conversations where you get those stories from these people and stuff, whatever it might be, and then I get to kind of help preserve it and educate others on it, too. So, but yeah, man, it's really neat to get it from firsthand from somebody, that was there, especially like you're saying, some of these guys that were hanging out at the bar. But
yeah, it's really neat. The guy that lived in this house, his name was Pat Pisani, and he was 82 years old. I think he was 82 when he died. He lived in this house for 82 years, from 1920 to like 2002. So he was 50 years old when the highway came through right across the street and completely, you know, plowed through the neighborhood, the park, the grocery store, the bar, everything that was there, just wiped it out to build a highway. I mean, imagine being 50 years old and sitting on your front porch and watching earth movers just move right through, and they found old passageways underground hidden and all kinds of fun, neat stuff. And
yeah.
So he actually got married. His wife moved in with him and his parents into this little four-room shotgun house. You know, that doesn't happen too much anymore.
Sure.
It's like, hey, mom, dad, I'm getting married. She's moving in. You know? but that's what happened here. And then Pat, so he lived here. His parents died. His wife died. His dog died. He was still here 82 years later. Mm. So the first 3 years of the bar being open, that the bar was open, he would come over and we'd have lunch, or I'd come over here and hang out with him. And I mean, almost every day for a few years, and he would just tell me stories. And he was a guy who never really drank much. He'd have a beer or two, maybe a little 10 ounce, and maybe a second one of a half full. Don't fill it up. I told you not. I'm like, you don't have to drink. He's like, well, I'm going to drink it. You know, he didn't want that. He wanted 1.5 10 ounce glasses.
All right.
15 ounces of beer, not 16 or 17. He's a little guy, and but he remembered everything, is the point of that, is that he wasn't a heavy drinker. And we used to joke about that. I'm like, man, you remembered everything. And he's like, yeah, I wasn't like all those other guys. I didn't drink too much. I was paying attention. it was really cool. It was a really awesome opportunity. He was a great friend. Alicia's Pizza even knew when he passed away, because that pizza that we ordered almost every day, yeah. Every other day from Alicia's, all of a sudden, you know, still get the Pat special every once in a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys like that, there's dozens of them, and, you know, and plenty more, but dozens that I was able to meet and really get to know before they passed. And it was awesome. It was very similar to kind of that old, the blues, the generation of blues musicians that, of that similar generation that have passed or almost all passed recently. Or maybe that's just me getting old, that people are passing that I know, but, you know, I'm only 41. I'll say only 41. But there seems to be a generation of blues musicians that we're almost kind of at the end of.
Sure.
That, you know, other than a few wonderful souls, it's a little different. And maybe just that's probably a tangent we might not go on, but, you know, the way people make music now has changed, and the musicians have changed, and the focus on different parts of the musicianship, and how the access, the attention deficit, there's a lot of things that play into it.
I had a conversation with Jeremy Siegel Moss a while back on the show, and you know, speaking of Venice and these blues guys and stuff, and Jeremy, that's why he was a big student of it all, just wanted to learn from all these guys as much as he could. And then, like, he shared, passed on a lot of the stories with me when we talked, and like, and that's what it was really, really cool, just to hear these stories coming from him, that, and he got to learn from all these guys, like you're saying, like, yeah. So
I love Jeremy, and he is someone who I think we are very similar in that way, and we were around at the same time. When I was really early in my phases of Pops Blue Moon and Loyal Family, I think Bottoms Up Blues Gang started at Pops Blue Moon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we birthed out of that same time, and looking up to some of those same musicians.
Right.
He could play, so he decided to take lessons, sure. And got to be a little friendlier with them in a way than I did.
Right.
But I got to book them and throw parties and be friends and get to know them on a personal level as well. And I was definitely always envious of how much time he got to hang out with. like, yeah. If only I could play, I could hang out with some of those really cool people too, even more, you know?
Yeah.
We got that big street fest. You can find all that information and more Ballin' Pops on online. We'll come out and celebrate 20 years of Pops Blue Moon out here.
Yeah, we're gonna hold off on announcing any artists. We're gonna not do that, or do we want to talk about it?
Well, you can do it. Yeah, whatever you got. If you want
to, I mean, it's a fun lineup. Yeah, so I'm happy to talk about it. We have One Way Traffic, one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's so good.
They're all kind of house musicians at the moon on different nights of the week, it seems. So I love those guys. The Discotheques, of course. Alexis and the Crew. Bubble Vest, which are, they're kind of some good friends, maybe a little lesser known, but they're a lot of fun and have shown up on a lot of my birthday parties and street fests over the years. So some of the people that follow really closely or are aware of who Bubble Vest are, but they're kind of a comedy meets music, dance, rock, laugh, yeah. A little bit of all of the above, you know. It's got some Flight of the Conchords, it's got some Tenacious D, it's got some Reggie Watts, it's got some Beck, it's got some, it's a little bit, it's a good mix,
right.
It's a fun playful so. And then we're pretty excited about bringing Cat Delic, which is Ron Cat Spearman from Parliament Funkadelic.
Oh wow.
Is gonna be the headline for that one. Kind of the headline act and the special feature. That's something we've been looking forward to trying to find. We've been looking for the right show to bring him on. He was at a Night Chaser last year. At the one under the big top.
Yeah.
The Night Chaser under the big top. But it's some heavy funk, rock, soul, really. He's a super talented musician and his band's great. I think they did a little set at Day Chaser too at the Boathouse. So they've been popping up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, Ron is engaged to my sister Abby and they have three kids together.
Wow.
So he's in the family.
Yeah.
Little tidbit of information that's good for something like this is that they actually met at Zojam, which was the first big festival that I did with some friends back in 2005, that had George Clinton and the Parliament, Funkadelic, Carl Denson and Tiny Universe, Jacob Fred Jazz Odyssey, Schwag was on the bill. It was a pretty exciting time and a really neat festival. A whole bunch of other regional acts and local acts.
Yeah, man.
So that was the first festival of the second season at Camp Zo. A great festival. People from all over the country were there. Hot Tuna was one of the other headliners that I forgot.
Yeah, man.
Forgot for a moment, even though that was one of the moments where I, you know, watched them hanging out in a boat in a pond in a canoe backstage before the show, and I'm like, is this really happening? Am I really producing an event where Hot Tuna is in a canoe in a pond backstage in the middle of Missouri? And tonight, George Clinton's going to be on that stage.
Right.
There's going to be two tour buses and a whole big party going on out in the middle of Missouri.
That's
in the woods.
Insane, right?
Like, this is pretty awesome, you know? And this is 2005, so I was 26,
right.
27 years old, something like that. Maybe 27, 26. And, yeah, that was really an exciting time. And that was, and then right after Zojam, went into the tours and the Battle of the Bands for all the festivals. Met Eric Noble at that time. We did all these tours. And then kicked in the shows in St. Louis and stepped those up because I met these bands from all these cities. Like, everywhere I'd go, I'd meet bands and really meet them and get to know them and then book them in St. Louis when they came through town. So it all kind of, it's all played off. It's been like, I feel like I've been a pinball.
Right.
In a pretty exciting game with a whole bunch of art and music.
Yeah, man.
You know? And I have my hands in a whole bunch of projects, and it has been 2720 and Loyal Family and Pop's Blue Moon, and but they all work together. They all, you know, benefit from the other.
Yeah.
And which has been, it's been both fun and challenging.
Yeah.
To wear all those hats.
Yeah, for sure. That's pretty crazy though. Like you're saying, like I've had some of those moments, not quite George Clinton, you know, moments, but just where you have to step back and kind of pinch yourself that like, is this real life? You know, like this is,
yeah,
this is crazy that I'm somehow in this world and can do this stuff. And like, so those are really, really cool moments though, for sure.
It was really neat.
Yeah.
I mean, we brought 25 pinball machines from St. Louis,
yeah,
to Camp Zoe and set them up on Shakedown in the rocks and leveled them all out and had an arcade,
yeah, man,
in the middle of the festival. So it was fun. It was definitely neat and a huge learning experience as well.
Mm-hmm.
Stepping stone, you know, towards the next thing. It was a good time. And but yes, they met there. So that's Catdelic. That's kind of where the Parliament Funkadelic relationship and Loyal Family, it goes way back. But Catdelic is going to headline the festival. We'll have some vendors, we'll have the bands, and yeah, should be a great time.
Yeah, well, come on out again, May 18th. It's gonna be a great time. Can we talk about the new project too now?
Let's do it.
El Vulcan.
Yes.
Which I guess you just made the announcement not too long ago that this was kind of starting up, right?
Yep, it's happening quickly. The opportunity came my way via bartender and concert promoter Clayton Elkins. He does Downright Entertainment here in St. Louis. They actually had a show last night at El Vulcan. It did over 600 people.
Oh.
It was great.
Yeah.
He asked me, he works Wednesday nights and promotes our What's Good Wednesdays, which is kind of our electronic Wednesday at the Blue Moon. It's a fun night, kind of experiment with all different kinds of dance music, and usually have visuals and projections, and $5 cover is normal unless it's a special act from out of town or something. But it's a good place just to, you know, have a weekly place for everybody to get together and be a part of that current, we'll call it bass music, scene. And, you know, we'll have house 1 week and something more dubstep the next week and some hip hop and, trying to keep it interesting. We just had like 5 MCs this past Wednesday. So trying to do a little bit of everything, but keep it somewhat focused as well.
Yeah.
So he asked me, he said, what's up with that club down the street? And I said, yeah, it's a neat club. It's been there for over 20 years. It used to be called La Onda. Now it's called El Vulcan. It's pretty neat. Reggae shows, hip-hop shows, different, usually Hispanic shows over time. I mean, definitely 95% Hispanic shows and Hispanic-owned. For at least the last couple of years, it has been. And so he goes down there and he checks it out and he's like, hey Josh, I went down there and they were really nice and that place is pretty cool and it's really big. And I was like, yeah, it's big, you know. And he's like, no, it's like, it's really big. Like, it's huge. And I was like, well, Clayton, I mean, you could fit 400 or 500 people, you know, that's packed. The bar doesn't quite, he's like, no, man, no, look at these pictures. And he shows me pictures and I was like, holy smokes. Like, I knew they put a new double door on the building that was next to what has been the venue for 20 years. There's a building connected to that that they gutted, and it was a two-level, had offices upstairs and some sort of industrial action going on the first floor.
Yeah.
They gutted the whole place. It has like 25-foot ceilings, open rafters, arch ceiling. It's beautiful and huge, and it's, you know, it's brick, and there's a big stage and a line array sound system already hanging up, and 14 moving lights up in the rafters already installed. And I mean, there's literally a functioning, ready to go music venue that can hold over 1,000 people, less than 3 blocks from my house of all people.
Yeah.
You know, someone who has literally been looking for a venue, had a venue, went through the whole phase, enjoyed it, it was great, passed it off to some friends, thought about kind of retiring from all that action, turning 40, was like, okay, I'm gonna just go back to doing some other things that I was doing, the clothing line, the things that Loyal Family was into, you know, booking tours and concerts at other venues, and being a little more fluid and, you know, not so stuck under one roof every day. And then here comes a 1,600 capacity venue that's right. 3 blocks away, 2 rooms, 2 bars, just ready to go, and they only really need it on the weekends. They don't, and meaning Saturday and Sunday. Those being their busy days, they don't have much interest, they don't have current need for the venue Monday through Friday. So what started with Clayton going in there and checking out the room and coming back and him saying, I think you need to meet them, I already told them about you. I went back in there with Clayton thinking maybe we'll get Fridays, which is already kind of going to be a pretty ambitious, you know, move to do a 1600 cap venue that's 3 a.m. In case I didn't mention that, it's 3 a.m.
Yeah.
1600 cap on the hill, which is brand new for St. Louis. It's one of those, hey, St. Louis is growing up moments, you know, where, wait, there's a giant club and music venue centrally located on the hill.
Yeah.
You know, the hill is all of a sudden more than just restaurants and a place to live and, you know, some cool little shops, like with a couple little bars. It's like all of a sudden, you know, you have Gaslight, who's doing some really cool things over there, JB is, and then all of a sudden, what comes with a venue of that size is substantial.
Sure.
You know, people going to eat before the shows, people,
absolutely,
you know, it wanting to live next to an area like that, it's a gravitational point. I saw it do wonders on Cherokee Street. Although Cherokee Street did wonders on its own, but we were part of that energy, and it was a good feeling and a good thing to know that you're bringing, you know, we were bringing 30, 40, sometimes 50,000 people a year to Cherokee Street for our shows. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, that was feeding into the
right,
the economy there. So it's between, you know, having Pop's Blue Moon, having this other new venture that we haven't even talked about yet and was going to be the most exciting thing of the year that I've been waiting 20 years for, literally got one-upped by an even bigger thing that I've been waiting 20 years for.
It's funny how...
all at the same time,
yeah,
you know?
It's funny how faith kind of does it to you sometimes, you know? It's like, as you're thinking about hanging it up, they're like, no, not yet. Like,
not even close.
Yeah, I was like...
Not even close. I'd say I'm far from hanging it up, but I was attempting to shift my focus into some other crazy ideas and things that I like and working on to create and for other people's enjoyment and wellness.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to do it. We had 2 Fridays. We had over 1,000 people these last 2 Fridays, 400 and 600, come through the door with minimal promotion overall and nobody really knowing that the venue exists. People were really excited about it. They were really excited to be there, really happy to have an alternative space and just that you know, they get to think about what might be coming there soon is exciting.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Not only for me, but for, I think it is for everybody else too.
Right. I'm definitely, as a music fan, I'm excited to have another venue and another, you know, another great opportunity to see live music and stuff. It's going to be fun for sure.
Well, I can say I have some pretty exciting offers out, so.
Yeah.
Let's see if they trust me.
Yeah.
You know.
All right.
I've been doing this for a while, and I'm pretty sure I found a good room, a good family that owns it, that I feel comfortable working with. It's a father and his son and daughter, so that's a pretty loyal family, mm-hmm. if you ask me.
Yeah.
My sister Abby's gonna be helping out, as well as Clayton, and you know, it's a family affair.
Very cool.
It fits right in.
But you can follow Loyal Family on Facebook for more details after
for sure. Loyal Family, loyalfamily.com is functioning and up and current and staying hip for the first time in 15 years since I've been doing Loyal Family. I've gone through 10 different websites, but there's one that's up and ready, and it's going to have a calendar a feature coming to it soon. There'll be a calendar in a store, but loyalfamily.com is a good place to just see who I'm working with and what I'm working on right now.
Nice. Well, let's talk about you are opening another new project right next door to Pops.
Yes.
And this will be a CBD space.
Yes, CBD space is what I'm liking. I'm calling it. It's more about education and gathering in a comfortable environment and atmosphere. There will be a retail element in the corner of CBD products, specializing in beverages for people to enjoy while they're there hanging out. If they want to hang out, listen to some music, enjoy the atmosphere, talk to other people that are, you know, into the same thing, that might be a little more comfortable of a, they might, I think sometimes people are more comfortable just talking to other people and not necessarily the person that's trying to sell them something. So I think create an environment that, you know, has the open discussion, the social aspect of it all, I think is something I think I would enjoy, so I'm gonna offer it to other people, and we're gonna be a place that's kind of a gathering place for new product releases, for new education, sampling, brand. You know, brands will be able to come to the space and shake hands with people and talk about their products, and I think that's gonna be our focus, is to really push the weekends as a time for people to come hang out and learn more than anything.
Yeah, Matt, I mean, I was kind of telling you off mic, but that's a lot of, like, I just want to learn about, like, I don't know about CBD much, I don't know about a lot of these things, but I have a willingness to learn, and I think that's, I wish more people did, like, you know, just want to take initiative to educate themselves and on all this stuff. So
yeah, I think there's just something that's I think it's important, the same as the bar, the movement. I've been heavily involved with Wellbeing Brewing and doing the non-alcoholic beverages, not only beer, but just really learning a lot about the non-alcoholic beverage movement in general. There's really a big change coming with beverages and what is socially acceptable to drink,
yeah.
You know, and different at different events at different times. There's a lot of tradition out there, and it digs deep, you know, and it's out there everywhere. But I think there's just new ways of thinking. There's new concepts. There's new products. There's new there's new things that people are tapping into, and I think that the non-alcoholic beverage industry and learning all about that and how it was working and how it was growing, and CBD in a way, and the cannabis movement is like fuel on that fire. It's kind of like if somebody is going to ask why you would drink a non-alcoholic beverage, well, if there's CBD in it, that question is null and void already. It's kind of like, well, that's why.
Yeah.
It's to relieve stress or to relieve anxiety or to calm down or, you know, the different reasons that people have for that are very similar, as you might hear somebody say, why do you drink alcohol? And they say, oh, well, it's been a stressful day, or
sure,
to relax, or it makes me feel better. I'm like, interesting. That's the same way, same thing everybody says about CBD. Yeah. But they're definitely doing different things to you.
Yeah.
So I think that there's just a change. I think there's a lot of change happening in the way people think and what's accepted where. And so I've been experimenting a lot of with that at Pops Blue Moon, and because I have that space to try new things in. Not only have I been experimenting and educating and presenting CBD, non-alcoholic, we have non-alcoholic spirits from England and Europe, or England, Ireland, that most people don't even know exist. So it's fun. It's like, I think, long story short, is that I think bars have this, neighborhood bars especially, the corner bar, you know, that hangout bar, that's the dive bar, I think those have an opportunity right now to really reach out to more people than they have been and offer them something that's gonna, you know, create that loyal customer base that's not, doesn't have to be their normal alcohol, you know, it can be something different. And I think getting more creative and realizing that people are into different things and that it's okay to diversify a little bit, you know, offer a variety. Just because you're offering an NA beer doesn't mean that the guy drinking a beer needs to feel less comfortable drinking that beer just because somebody else is going to feel more comfortable drinking their beer.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think there's a balance there, and everything in time, and you can't just throw a whole bunch of stuff over on top. You know, I think it's a balance, or there's an art to it even,
right.
You know, giving people as much as they can handle at a time. Sometimes I feel like I'm overwhelming people with new things. They're like, I don't even know what you're up to these days, you know. It's like, I sometimes wonder if I would be better off specializing in one thing, and everybody's like, oh yeah, that's what Josh does, that's what he's good at. Instead, it's kind of like, I'm not sure what Josh does.
Right.
He's got his hands on a whole bunch of stuff, but yeah. What is he actually doing, you know? What's he good at? If you were to be like, what's Josh good at? I'm not sure what that answer is.
Yeah.
There's going to be some awkward silence there for waiting for me to answer.
I totally relate to that, man. But I mean, I think that's what keeps it interesting, I think, too. Like, to where, because you might, if you're doing the same thing every day, you're probably going to get bored, you know, to an extent, you know. It's like, so it's nice having multiple projects to keep everything fresh all the time for you. I'm guessing, because that's how it is for me too. Like I have my day job stuff and I get bored with it, but I have all these other projects that I like, the podcast and stuff, that I put a lot of creative energy into, and that's like, you know, that's what keeps it everything fun. Like, so I that's how I feel about it. Keeps it interesting.
That's what I try to tell people, is that if I keep things interesting for myself, then hopefully they'll all agree.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. With well-being, do you have a hand in that? Like, is it creating and stuff? Like, do you...
Yeah, I've been focused mostly on sales and marketing. Kind of was the on-premise guy, I guess you could say, that... because I have so much experience in bars and restaurants and music venues and that type of thing. It's easy for me to walk in and know what that person wants to hear or needs to hear to make that sale. And it's part of why I fell in love with the company and the concept and the idea and everything, is because I just knew how important of a place it had. You know, I knew it was needed.
Mm-hmm.
There was not there are not many non-alcoholic beverage options when you go out to bars and restaurants and music venues and art galleries and all those types of places. It's just, it's very limited.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to change over time. And it's more, again, I think it's about education, and it's even about educating the venues and the bars and letting them know that, hey, people are interested in other things. They're willing to spend money on them. You just have to offer them and see how it works. You know, it's one of those things, you're not having people request things because they don't know they exist yet.
Right.
It's our job as the trendsetters and the industry to provide those options. And I've seen it work. I have a little dive bar on the hill, and there were very few NA beer drinkers because NA beer options were awful, and they've gotten a lot better. And there's a lot of other beverages that are just kind of fun and tasty to drink that aren't just sugary and sweet and that feel good, that look good, that have something in them that you might, you know, benefit from, or that might be something that you need or that you enjoy or whatever. And I think that, you know, there's people come into the bar all the time and say, I never knew that existed. That tastes so good. Or where can I get that? You know, that kind of thing.
Sure.
That's awesome. That's fun for me, and it's fulfilling, you know?
So every Saturday at Pops is NA Saturdays, right?
Every Saturday we take out the booze completely. We have a normal 3 to 6 kind of, you can get your booze if you need it. And then from 6 to 7 we close for an hour just to reset. And I take anything out of the bar that is branded with vodka or drink alcohol or anything that's kind of that trigger. So it's a very neutral environment that has local art on the walls and things that are music, you know, oriented.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's just getting rid of the bar mats that say vodka.
Right.
And the clock that says PBR and the Clydesdale's, you know, running around in a circle, and it's a really cool Budweiser Clydesdale Light, but it's alcohol.
Sure.
And for us, we just feel like there's a need, and really it's just it's doing something different. You know, if you have 1,000 people all doing something the same, why not offer somebody something different?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's probably a few people out there that are going to really appreciate something different.
Yeah. Well, very cool, man. Well, you can get involved. I mean, I feel like with this conversation we could probably keep going.
Sure
for,
thing.
For hours, there's a lot more I want to know about Josh, but we got, you know, like I said, you got a busy schedule to keep, so we got a lot of things happening. And
well, I
got
to get ready for night chasing.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
that's,
man.
That's what it
we
is.
We got a big party tonight for
that's
sure.
Right.
But yeah, you can find all this information on head over to loyalfamily.com. That'll be your central hub for everything, and then come on out to Pop's Blue Moon.
And El Vulcan,
yeah.
Soon a CBD,
pick up some
CBD space.
Pick up some Wellbeing Brewing, you know, whatever it is. So, but yeah, man, thank you so much for doing this, Josh. And let's do it again soon, man.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.